I'm deeply grateful to my dear friend, Rav Mordechai Melman, to Rav Nadel, and to the officers of the Beit HaChaim for allowing me the privilege to be able to speak to you tonight. The Panovich Rav was once asked about... the makar, the reason for a certain minig in Klal Yisrael. The minig in Klal Yisrael is that when someone unfortunately has to go to a levaya and he travels a certain route, he does not come back the same route, he doesn't travel the same street as he went to the levaya. As a matter of fact, in the Gesher HaChaim it's written, Yesh noyagim kesechoizrin melevaya tamei holchin b'derech acheret. You travel a different route. So somebody asked the Panovich Rav, what is the makar? What is the reason for this minig? And the Panovich Rav said in Yiddish, but of course I'll say it in English. He said, how could a person come back from a levaya the same way he went to the levaya? In other words, what the Panovich Rav was saying, b'hashkofa, is that pasuk which Shlomo HaMelech wrote in Kehelet, Toiv l'leches el beis evel, mileches el beis mishta. If a person has a choice, whether to go to a mishta, a party of reshut, or to go to a beis evel, it is better to go to a beis evel, b'asher hu soif kol ha'odam, because that's the end of all mankind, v'hachai yitein eliboy, the living will take it to heart. In other words, when someone goes to a levaya, when someone is confronted with any component or aspect of death, he comes back a different person, an elevated person. And so tonight, the night after Zion Adar, we have come together in a most unusual place for a public drasha. I have had the opportunity to speak, Baruch Hashem, hundreds of times in hundreds of places, even in so far as my dear friend who's sitting here from South Africa, Rav David Aronowitz, I had the schus to be in his home and to be in his community. But never have I had the opportunity to speak in a mukkah such as this. And I think that it's appropriate the night after Zion Adar, when Klal Yisrael commemorates the death and the yahrzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu, we're better to meet and to think seriously, perhaps to learn from death so much that we have to learn about life. No one wants to die. As a matter of fact, if you look in the Daskenim Balei Tosfos, to me, this is one of the saddest pieces of commentary that exist on the Chumash. Take a look in Dvarim Lamed Daled Pasuk Hey. Every single time that I read that Daskenim Balei Tosfos in its entirety, it brings me to tears, as I am sure it will bring you to tears as well. It tells Bishas Misosai, when Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to die, Omar Loi Moshe LaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, Lo Yomut Ki Echya. I don't want to die. I want to live. I don't want to leave this world. And the Eibishter said to him, Yata Yochel, and Moshe Rabbeinu, as much as I love you, it's impossible. He said, Derech Kol Ha'odom. That's the way of all mankind. And when Hashem saw that Moshe Rabbeinu did not want to leave this world willingly, Miyad Kora HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Nishmosai Shal Moshe. The Eibishter then addressed the Neshama of Moshe and said, Biti, my daughter, for 120 years I have allowed you to live in this guf. Now is the time to come back to Shemayim. And the Neshama started crying. And the Neshama said, Hashem, I would rather be by this guf noki. There is no one that had the holy, pure body of Moshe Rabbeinu. I want this to continue to be my dwelling place. And the Eibishter said, I will take you to Shemayim, among the Malachim. And the Neshama said, no, nobody can be as holy as Moshe Rabbeinu. And so then, the Torah tells us, Vayomos Shem Moshe Ever Hashem Ve'eretz Moyav Al Pi Hashem. The Eibishter kissed Moshe Al Pi Hashem. Hashem, and it was Mitzas Neshika, and that's when the Neshama left. And when the Rabbeinu Shel Olam kissed Moshe Rabbeinu, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam himself started crying. And he said, who's going to daven for my children? And then Yeshua started looking for Moshe Rabbeinu, and Nebuch, he too started crying. And eventually when all of Klal Yisrael realized what happened, they too started crying. What I want to tell you right now is not a pleasant thought, but perhaps it's something on a night like this, in a place like this, that we should take it seriously. We all wish each other, Ms. 11 is 120, we should live till 120. And why do we do that? Because Moshe Rabbeinu was 120. But let's not kid ourselves. Tonight is a night for serious thought. David HaMelech tells us in Tehillim Tzadik Pasuk Yud, Yemei Shenoseinu Behem Shivim Shana, the lifespan of a person is 70 years. The Imbik Vuroi, and if he's lucky enough to have that strength, Shmoinim Shana is going to live till 80. So every single person here over 35 and 40, including myself, you should know that you have already lived more than half your life. And you know, I want to tell you something. There was a Rav who once came to a community, and it was Shabbat Shuvah, and he was giving a drasha, and he said, everyone in this community should know that each and every one of you is going to die. No one is going to live forever. And everyone was very serious, except one guy was smiling. And the Rav couldn't believe it. He's talking Ernst the Raid, and this guy is smiling. And the Rav says again, everyone in this community will die. No one will live forever. And this guy's still smiling. So the Rav says to him, excuse me, sir, but this is a serious drasha. He says, Rabbi, I don't live in this community. So therefore, there could be people here below 35 and below 40. And they're going to think, well, he's not talking about me. So I'm telling you, I'm talking about everybody. And everybody who's going to listen to this tape as well. No one lives forever. If Moshe Rabbeinu had to give back his neshama, then all of us will also have to give back our neshama. There's a very great mekubal in Eretz Yisrael. His name is Rav Gamliel Rabinovitz. I had the chus to meet him numerous times. And he once told me something half in jest and half serious. He said, from the minute a baby is born, he begins dying. And finally, when he finishes dying, they put him in a box. And you know, Rav Moshe once said the same thing when he spoke at a dinner for a Chevra Kadisha. These are the words that Rav Moshe said. The Iker she is boine mizeh, a person has to know and understand. B'chol rega v'rega hu meit. Every second we are dying. Sheharega she'ovra, the moment that passes, eino, will never be able to be retained again. V'loi tach v'loi, it will not come back. U'v'yodai, however, it is within the power of every man and every woman alive. Lasoi she'ehei nitzchi. We can make every moment that we live, we can make that an eternal moment. And so therefore tonight, when we come together after Zion Adar, when we come together in such a mukkah, we have to make sure that tonight we will grow. Tonight we will become inspired. Tonight we will become elevated. And more than anything else, tonight we will change so that we should make this night and this moment a moment of nitzchius, as Rav Moshe would have wanted. I want to tell you now a very powerful, painful story. But this story will show us how a Yid thinks and the level that Yidden can reach. I just heard this story a few weeks ago, and the father who told it to me said, use my name. So I'm going to use his name. This fellow is El Yashonig from Detroit. El Yashonig had a son, Chesky. Chesky was 13 and a half years old. After his bar mitzvah, he got very, very ill. And the doctors tried to figure out what it was. And within weeks, they were able to figure out that tragically he had leukemia. Now, this little Chesky, when he was less than 2 years old, he had leukemia. But he had gone into remission. And by the time he had his second birthday, he was perfectly cured, everybody thought. So now many, many years later, after his bar mitzvah, when it came back, the parents were absolutely devastated. And of course they took him to all the doctors and tried to get the best medical care. And El Yeshonik tells me that one day he was in shul, and a fellow comes over to him and he says, "Mr. Shonig, I want you to know that your son is going to be cured. He's going to be fine." So El Yeshonik said to this fellow in shul, "How do you know that my son is going to be cured?" He said, "It's a Beferish Pasuk. The Pasuk tells us that when Klal Yisrael is doing battle, they battle a different laws and different levels than when Goyim do battle. When Goyim do battle, they have chariots, they have horses. But Vanachnu, B'Shem Hashem Elokeinu Nazkir, we mention the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Avis is on our side, he's on our side in the battle. So you are battling against leukemia if your child was a Goyish child." So then I would say, conventional says that it's very little hope for this child. But du bist doch hayid, you have nothing to worry about. And El Yeshonik told me that when this person told it to him, it gave him such chizuk. He kept walking around for days, and he was convinced that his son would have a refuah shleima. His son was taken to the Harper Hospital in Detroit, and there he had a bone marrow transplant. And when he came to visit his son Chesky, and the doctor said to him, "Your son is doing better than everybody else on the ward," he felt in his heart, of course, Eila Berecha v'Eila Basutim v'Anachnu v'Shem Hashem Elokeinu Nazkir. He was the only Jewish child on the ward. Of course he's going to do better. And this is only a temporary nightmare. Tragically, a few months later, Chesky got sicker and sicker, and Nebuch, he passed away. And when he passed away, the whole Yiddish community of Detroit was there. Everybody had been saying tilim for this poor child. And of course, everybody was thunderstruck. And you can understand how devastated El Yeshonik and his family was. And El Yeshonik told me that he walked around for weeks. What happened to that pasuk? Eila Berechev, Ve'eila Basutim, Anachnu V'Shem Hashem Elokeinu Nazkir. This was the pasuk I was relying on. What did David HaMelech mean? Where's the Eivisha? What happened? I was so convinced that this was shot in the Pasuk, and the Pasuk was eating him up alive. And then he told me one morning in davening, he came up with this understanding. Listen to how a person understands the Pasuk. He says, what David HaMelech is telling us is not the battle plan during the war. But David HaMelech is telling us what it is after the war. When the war is over, a goy looks back and says, "Oy, if only I would have done something different, we could have won the battle. Eila Berechav, the Eila Basutim. If only we would have had a different battle plan, we would have sent the bombs in different places, we would have had a different strategy, we could have done. But Klal Yisrael, v'nachnu v'shem Hashem Elokeinu Nazkir. We know that whatever happened, happened only because Hashem wanted it." And then he says, that's the shot in the next pasuk. Heima karu v'nafalu. The goyim, they slumped and they fell because they believed that they could have changed it. If only they would have acted different, something different would have happened. But v'anachnu us, kamnu v'nisoydod, we arise and we become invigorated because we know that's the Rosh Hashem. Imagine a person who loses a child should be able to say after that child has passed on that he is v'anachnu kamnu v'nisoydod, because a Jew doesn't look backwards. A Jew understands that we go through certain sorrows and we cannot control the way we die, but we can control the way we live. We must do everything we can to maintain life. But if Chas v'Shalom the Avish that takes a life, even the life of Chesky Shonik, the father is able to say, we cannot control how we die, but we can control how we live. And a Jew doesn't look backwards because he knows that whatever happened, happened because it was the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So let me tell you a story. A story that a woman told publicly, but it breaks my heart. I cannot say the family name. Some of you may know it. But I simply cannot say it, even though the woman told the story publicly. A woman had a number of children. One was more brilliant than the other. This happened many years ago in the 60s. And the oldest child, as brilliant as she was, unfortunately, went out to college in California and became one of the flower children. And she came on drugs. And the parents, Erlich her people, had no control over this daughter, this oldest daughter who was out in California. And every day they dreaded to hear what could possibly happen to that child. And one time, Nebuch, the police came to the home and they delivered the terrible, terrible news that she died of an overdose. And now, the other younger children were sitting shiva together with the mother, and the mother was inconsolable. And she was crying without stop. So the little girl, who today is a tremendous mechanecher, the little girl at that time said to her mother, as only perhaps a little girl who was not yet mature in the ways of the world, said, "Mama, why are you crying? Everybody has to die sometime." So the mother said, "I'm not crying at how she died. I'm crying at how she lived." And you know, the Kotzker Rebbe tells us a tremendous pshat. Bila Marosha said in Bamidbar Chof Gimel Yud, "Tomois Navshi Mois Yesharim." I want that I should die the death of the Yesharim, the straight ones, Avram Yitzchak V'Yankai. V'tehi Achriti Kamoy, my end should be like them. So the Kotzker Rebbe says, yeah, Bilam wants to die like a Jew. But the only way you can die like a Jew is if you live like a Jew. And that's what we're going to learn tonight. We're going to learn from certain extraordinary people how we can make every moment precious, how we can make this moment a moment of Nitzchias, and how we can elevate the way we live while we are lucky enough to be in this world. So who are the exemplary people that we should try to learn from on a night like this? So I'll tell you a remarkable story. I just heard this story just a couple days ago. I had the great chus this last week, and he would have been here tonight, except he's now on a plane back to Amsterdam. The Abbezdin of Amsterdam, a young Talmud Chacham, Rav Yehuda Leib Lewis, was in my home for the last week. And he told me that many years ago, his father, Oliver Shalom, told him this story. You see, Berlin, the city of Berlin, was not always in Germany, because Germany only became Germany in the year 1871, but this story happened in 1750. In 1750, Berlin was part of a country called Prussia. But even then, there was already anti-Semitism in Berlin. And in the early 1740s, Yidden could not live in Berlin, and they certainly could not have a house of worship, they could not have a shul. But then in 1750 came King Frederick, and King Frederick allowed Yidden to come back into Berlin, and he allowed them to have a Beis HaKnesset. Of course, they didn't have a fancy shul, they had just come back, so they probably had it in some basement or in some storefront. And after a few weeks, King Frederick decided, "I want to go see how these Jews pray. I allow them to have a house of worship. Let me see what a Jewish house of worship looks like." Unfortunately, he happened to pick the night of Tisha B'Av to come to see the Beis HaKnesset. He comes in, everybody's sitting on the floor, half the lights are out, there's no parochas on the Aron Kodesh. He can't believe this. These people are morose. They're so sad. What a rachmanis. But he liked them, obviously. He respected them. That's why he allowed them even to have the shul. So he decided he's going to give them a gift to beautify the shul. So he had won a war recently against the Turks. And one of the things that they had captured in the war was a beautiful embroidered banner from the Turkish army. So he decided that he's going to give it to this people, to the Beis HaKnesset. And like this,
They can have a shame in the shul. They'll be able to beautify their shul.
No, they get this present. What in the world are they supposed to do with it? Because after all, the king gave it. So they have to use it. So they had no choice. They had to use it at a certain time. And so they decided that they would use this banner as a paroiches on Simchas Torah. And they used it. And I want you to know that Nebuchadnezzar, Kristallnacht, when this shul was burned, it was burned, and that paroiches was burned together with the shul. But let me tell you something interesting. When they received this beautiful banner, they felt that they had to respond. After all, if he gave us a gift, we have to respond, and we have to do something for him. So they sent a letter, or they sent a messenger to the king's men, and they said, what would be the way that we could show our appreciation that he gave us this beautiful gift? So they said, what you have to do is to give him the highest form of accolade, the highest form of praise, and make him a member in your highest society. So the shul was thinking, what is the highest, what is the most revered position in the community? And they decided the Chevra Kadisha. And because, why is it called Chevra Kadisha? What's the real reason why it's called Chevra Kadisha? Actually, they're working with Tmeyim. You know what the real answer is? Because those who worked in the Chevra Kadisha were such heiliger people. You didn't just volunteer for the Chevra Kadisha. You were elected to the Chevra Kadisha. It was the holiest, the kindest, the purest people of the community that were elected to be members of the Chevra Kadisha. So that was the highest accolade. And so therefore they made him an honorary member of the Chevra Kadisha. Now, of course, we all know that German Yidden are very, very orderly and very punktlich. So there used to be a system in the Chevra Kadisha in that town that when they called you and it was your turn, you had no choice, you had to go. If there was a mace that night that needed a tire, or that day, whenever they did it, and you had another function, this is where you had to be. And if not, you gave a knas. And the knas went to the Chevra Kadisha, and the Chevra Kadisha was such holy people that they were the biggest gaboy stalker in the community. And the Chevra Kadisha was so trusted that everyone gave them money. Of course, they didn't take money for the work that they did in the Chevra Kadisha work, but they were so trusted they would give Achmas Shalom for the Aniyim. So any time King Frederick's turn was supposed to come up, of course they didn't call him because he was a goy, he's not going to be able to do the Tara, but the community gave Stoker as a knot because this person in turn couldn't come, and they gave it to the Chevra Kadisha, who then eventually dispensed it. So we see that the Chevra Kadisha in times of yore were considered the highest and the most sophisticated, the Kedusha type of people that we had in every community. And I'll tell you another story that just shows how Yidden feel about the holy work of Chevra Kadisha people. In Amsterdam, where Rabbi Yehuda Leib Lewis is a Rav, in his shul there was a fellow whose name is Moshe Cohen. Moshe Cohen, he's a Kohen. And of course a Kohen can't be part of the Chevra Kadisha. A Kohen can't be in the same room with a mace. And this fellow wanted so much to be able to do the holy work of the Chevra Kadisha. But obviously he couldn't. But listen to what happened. A number of years ago, they bought a new field where they were going to open a new Beis HaKvoreis. Nobody was buried there yet. So he ran and he dug up the first grave. How do you like that? That's the Pshat HaKoyen that had such a chavimus to this mitzvah. That's the only way he could have done it, because there were no mason there yet, so he wanted to dig the first grave. If that's the case, let's listen to a gewaldig mocker for a minute from Yankov Kamenetsky, and then we'll see something that Rabbi Nadel, in his wisdom, showed me, a gewaldig thing. Many of us who daven every day by Avorech David, we stand. Why do you stand by Vayavorech David? What's so important about Vayavorech David more than any other part? It's better than Atrei. It's better than Shema. Why do we stand by Vayavorech David? So Rav Yankov once said a very interesting reason. It's mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, in Aruch Chaim Nun Aleph Zayin, the Berheitek Ziv Zayin,
by by Vorach David you stand, and people give tzedakah by that expression, v'ha'oysher v'ha'kovoid milfanecha, that the be'emes, the wealth and covered really is belongs to you, v'ata moysher v'akol, and you rule over everything. So when you say, v'ha'kodesh baruch hu, every day in davening, that really the money is all yours, so we want to show that, and we stand up and we give tzedakah. So Rav Yankov says, there's a mishnah in Bikurim that says when the Yidden used to bring Bikurim, they used to send out messengers, everybody should know the people with Bikurim are coming. And then the mishnah says that when they came to Yerushalayim, if let's say you're in the middle of work, and a Talmud Chacham walks by, you're not allowed to stand, you're in the middle of work, you're taking money from the Balabas. However, b'shasha oiskin b'malachtam, when these people come, chayovin lama, you have to stand up for the people that are doing bringing the bikurim. Why? Because chaviva mitzvah b'shaita. Because it's so special to give recognition to people who do a mitzvah in the proper time. So Rabbi Yankov says, you know why you stand by Vayvarach David? You're standing for all those people that are doing the mitzvah of giving tzedakah. How do you like that? What an einfall! That it has nothing to do with the tefillah itself, but it's because those people, they are getting ready to give tzedakah, we stand up for them. Because when you see a person doing a mitzvah, you have to stand up for him. So you know what Rabbi Nadel pointed out to me? Look at the Bar Tanura of that Bikurim, the Mishnah in Bikurim. Pei the Gimel, Mishnah Gimel. Umitam zeh, the Bar Tanura writes. Oimdin. That's the reason when a nifter comes in and we stand up, we don't stand up for the nifter. You stand up in the noisei hamita. You stand up for those who are the cheres hadish who are carrying the body, because they are doing such a holy mitzvah, and that's the mitzvah of the moment. That's the reason that we stand up when a nifter comes in. Not because of the nifter, we stand up for the noisei hamita. And of course, the second part of the Bar Tanura, once I saw it, made me very happy. Because the second part says, "Umnei hatinik lebris mila," that when those people, the kvata, walk into a bris, you also have to stand up for them. So therefore, I put my card right next to this mission of Dozaina Skula. So perhaps, if that is really what a Chevra Kadisha is all about, perhaps from now on we should elect in every shul people that are the most caring and the most holy and the most pure. We should have, every shul should have a few people that we elect as Chevra Kadisha. And it should be considered that these are the holiest people, both men and women, in the community. So where does it come from, really, that the Chevra Kadisha has to give so much kavod to the nifter? And you will be shocked at the mokar, at the source. You know what the source is? Listen to this. It says in Pasuk in Dvorim Chav Aleph Chav Beis, V'cheyiyya v'ishcheit mishpat moved, if a person did an avera that he deserves death. What kind of an avera? One of them you're not allowed to even to say with your mouth. He blessed Hashem, that's how you say it. You're not allowed to say the opposite. The person did the opposite of blessing, but you're not allowed to even say what he did. That's how bad the avera is. So if somebody blessed Hashem, but we know what I mean, the opposite. Or chas v'shalom, somebody served avodah zarah, he's supposed to be hung. And then the Torah tells us, v'talisa oisa ala eis. However, even if you hang him, you got to bring him down right before night. Why? Ki kilolas eloikim toloi. Having a person hung is a curse to Hashem. If a person is hanging, that's a curse to Hashem. Why is that a curse to Hashem? That would be a curse to the person. But Rashi tells us something amazing. Rashi says, Zilzuloi shel melechu. This is a disgrace to the king. Sha'adam osui b'demus b'yuknoi. Because a person is made in the likeness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so therefore Rashi says it's like two identical twins. One is good and one is a Rasha. And if the good guy is hanging, if the Rasha is hanging, somebody will walk by and say, oh, look at that, they're hanging the good guy. Because they're both identical. Nobody knows the difference. So Rashi says, when any person is hanging,
that's really, in a sense, a disgrace to Hashem, because Hashem's creation is hanging. That's the reason why Chevra Kadisha are so careful. Because every goof is a receptacle of the holiest thing that we have in this universe, and that is man's neshama. Ki ne'er Hashem nishmat Adam. And if that's the case, then we must listen to this Mishnah that we all know, but watch a tremendous insight. In Avos Gimel, Perek Aleph, Eizehu Mechubad, who is the one who is honored? Hamachaved es Habriyosh, one who gives covet to all creations. Why? And the Raya is, Shenemar ki mechabdai achaved. Hashem says, I will honor those who honor me, uboizai yekolu. Those who scorn me will be degraded. What do you mean? That's the Raya, that you're supposed to give covet to a person? Because Hashem says, those who honor me, we're talking about honoring people. The Teretz is that when you honor a person, you're honoring Hashem. That's what this Mishnah is telling us. And that's why this Mishnah uses the simplest lashon. Eizel mechubad amachabed es habriyos. Simple creation. Because the Mishnah was telling us, Ezel Gibor, Ezel Asher, Ezel Chacham. But this is not a guy who's a Chacham. This is not a guy who's an Asher or a Gibor. He's a simple man or woman. And when you honor him, Kimechabdai, those who honor me, they are honored. And you know what that means? That means even the simplest person carries the Ner Hashem Nishmas Odom. And that's the reason why we are mechuyev to give honor to every person. Why? Because they carry the neshama. How much more so do we have to give cover to each other if we are alive and we can make that neshama accomplish? When your child comes home from school with a ridiculous little painting, and it's the scribble, or it comes home on Sukkot, before Sukkot, with a little yellow ball that she says is an esrit, or a matzah made out of cardboard, you hang it up. Why? Because that's your matzah? Because that's your esrit? Of course not. You're honoring the child who made it. That's the reason we hang up what our children made. For years I hung up something that my daughter made in camp. Was it so beautiful? But my daughter made it. So I had it hanging over the piano for years. Because I honor my daughter. That's the same thing if you see a person, and the person's not so perfect. You think he's not perfect, but so what? It's Hashem who made that person. And when you honor that, that's like honoring your daughter who made that little piece of art that's really not worth anything, but you're honoring your daughter. So let's listen how Rabbi Yaakov honored people. This story was told to me by Rabbi Moni Weisberger. Moni Weisberger, I remember many years ago, used to live in Kew Gardens when he first got married. And he told me back in 1955 he was working for Torah Mesorah. And Rabbi Yaakov had to go to Philadelphia for a Din Torah. Now the people in the Din Torah in Philadelphia were both speaking English. And Rabbi Yaakov, although he understood English, he wanted to be sure that when you're involved in a Din Torah, that you're going to understand both parts, both people, both sides. So he said to Rabbi Weisberger, would you do me a favor? Would you mind coming with me and make sure to translate every word so that I'll understand it? So Rabbi Weisberger said, of course, Rebbe, I'll be honored to come. So Rabbi Yaakov said, I thought that you would say that. I bought you a ticket already. We'll go Sunday morning to Philadelphia. Matzah Shabbos, Rabbi Yaakov calls Moni Weisberger and he says to him, wait a second, you know what occurred to me over Shabbos? Didn't you just get married a few months ago? You're in the Shana Rishayna. So it says in Shulchan Aruch and the Sefer HaChinuch that a man is not allowed to leave town the first year that he gets married unless it's for Parnasa. So you need your wife's permission. So I'll tell you what. Ask your wife if she would like to come. And if she would like to come, I will make sure she'll get a tour of the city while we're involved in the Din Torah. He comes back to the phone 2 minutes later. He says, yes, Rosh Hashiva, my wife said she'll come. Rabbi Yaakov said, I figured so. I bought her a ticket. Fine. The next morning, they're supposed to meet in Port Authority. And Rabbi Yaakov looked so tired and haggard. And Rabbi Yaakov was usually fresh and alive. So Rabbi Weisberger said to him, Rosh Hashiva, is everything okay? Listen to what he said. He said, you know, this was 1955. Not everybody had air conditioners.
He had to be 7 o'clock in Port Authority. Rabbi Yaakov used to get up early every day before he davened. He had a seder, almost an hour of learning before he started davening. So he said, I knew that to be at Port Authority at 7, I had to get up at 4. It was very hot last night, and my window was open. And I knew that I had my alarm clock on, and the guy across the other apartment also had his window open. And if my alarm would go up at 4 o'clock, it would wake him up. So I didn't go to sleep all night. So I shouldn't have to have the alarm clock go off at 4. Because it's not right to make a person get up if he really doesn't have to. That's Gezel Shina. That dignity of a person. That's how you deal with a Bria. Has nothing to do whether a person is a Yid or not. Chazal tell us in Brachas Yudzayin Amar Aleph, Omru Alav Al Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai, if Rabbi Yochanan would have went on a bus, he wouldn't wait for the bus driver to say hello to him. He would have said good morning first. If he was going to pay a toll and he didn't have easy pass, he would say to that toll booth collector, good morning. That's how you deal with people. That's the dignity of man. That's how Rabbi Yankov taught us. You know, a while ago, and I don't know why it stopped. I think it's such a great campaign. A while ago, we got to get Morty Millman on this campaign. But he can do anything, as you can see. But listen to this. A while ago, there was a campaign in New York, and they wanted to make that drivers should be more courteous. And so they had signs all over, after you, sir. I thought it was brilliant. And in other words, by every toll booth, usually you have two cars coming together, so somebody's got to go in first. So you see that sign? After you, sir. You go first. What a beautiful thing. And that's something that I think tonight we should begin to adopt in our lives. The policy, after you, sir. How many times does it come you waiting to wash Netilas Yadayim, Shalashudas and Shul? Both of you come together at the sink at the same time? After you, sir. You're an Adam Kosher. You're an Adam. You're a Bria, created by Hashem. After you, sir. When children come down to lunch in the dining room in school, we have to teach them. Kids come down to the serving table at the same time. After you, sir. And the same thing when you're coming on a highway and you want to go into another lane, that's the dignity of another person. After you, sir. You walk into a shul, you walk into a building, two people come in at the same time, stop for a minute. After you, sir. Did you ever notice when you get off the bus in Eretz Yisrael and you get into that building for passport control? Oh, big sign to be. After you, sir. As if it's going to help. But, you know, you would think at passport control they're giving out free pizzas. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable how people run from that bus, and you're going to wait 25 minutes no matter what anyway. So what are you rushing for? They only have two windows open. Even though six planes came in, right? We all know that. So what's the point? David, remember, that's who we met the first time. David and I were waiting, and I see this guy from South Africa. He says, oh, I know who you are. So Baruch Hashem, we have to wait. We have a lifelong friendship because we waited on the passport line. We have to begin to foster politeness and respect. As Rav Nadel mentioned in his opening words, every Zion Adar, the Chevra Kadisha would pass, and as it's written in the Gesher Achayim, they would go out to the Beis Olam, and there they would be mispalel, and this is what they would be mispalel. They would daven and ask for forgiveness, mehamesim, from those that passed on, maybe chas v'sholom nichshalu be'ian hoga yeshara klapim mimehem. Maybe they didn't have the proper derecheret. So I want to tell you something that touched me amazing. I never saw this before. I had a bris a number of years ago in the Young Israel of West Hempstead. I forget the name of the Gabbai. So of course, Erev Yom Kippur, the Slichas is very short. So right after Shacharit, before we got to do the bris, both Gabbaiim, I still cannot get over this, both Gabbaiim came to the Bima and they said, Rabboisai, it's Erev Yom Kippur. We would like to ask Mechila from every single member of the shul. Maybe we didn't give you an aliyah that you thought that you deserved. What a beautiful, sensitive thing to do. Erev Yom Kippur, Gabbaiim and Shul.
That's the pshat dignity. That's the pshat respect. There's a beautiful story that a man in my neighborhood, Zev Schlesinger, told me about his father, Olam Shalom, Rav David. Rav David was known as a machnas oirach in Vienna, tremendous. So it happened in Vienna in 1920, there were two bachurim that came from Poland. They came, and they came to the Agudas Yisrael office, and they were told, go to the Shiv Shul Friday night. The Shiv Shul was on a certain street, I think it was Shiv Street, that's why it was called that. And they said, go there, and if David Schlesinger sees you, he will surely invite you. So they come to Shul, the place was mobbed, it was packed. And again, very orderly, everybody had his mokum kavua. So all the archim and the travelers, they sat in the last few rows. So they're trying, these bachurim, they're trying to catch the eye of David Schlesinger. He should see them because otherwise they don't have a place to be. And he walks down the center aisle after davening. And as he walks down the aisle, he nods to these boys. He says, good Shabbos, but he doesn't ask them over for Friday night. And they can't believe it. They didn't even make any efforts to get invited by anybody else because they thought for sure this tzaddik is going to invite them. That was his reputation. So the whole shul clears out. And they're left standing outside the shul. And they have no place to go. And they're looking around. They're standing for a few minutes. All of a sudden, in the distance, they see a man running back towards them. And he hears a fellow say, Bachrim, Bachrim, wait a minute, I'm coming. And he sees it's David Schlesinger. And he says, Bachrim, please come to my house. I need you to be here for the Suda tonight. They can't understand. He saw them before. What's this reason that he ran? He went away and then he came back. And when they were sitting at the Suda, one of the Bachrim just said, Rav David, I hope you don't mind my asking. I'm so curious. Didn't you see us in the shul? Listen to what he said. He said, did you notice when I was walking down the aisle to go outside, right next to me was another man. This man used to be very, very wealthy. And never he lost all his money. And if I would have invited you, he would have said, no, Rav David, let me have one of the boys. And I would not have been able to say no, but I know he can't afford it. He doesn't even have food for himself. So to save his pride and save his dignity, I didn't invite you in front of him because he would have felt compelled to invite you as well, and he can't afford it. So I walked him down the block to where he has to turn the corner, then I ran back to make sure that you were still here. That's called somebody that has feelings and sensitivity to somebody else. Let me tell you one more story. Two more little stories about what haste sensitivity. Rav Nissen Wolfen told me that he once came to Rav Munk's home in Borough Park, and there was a beautiful silver pushka that Rav Munk had. And he asked Rav Munk, what's the story behind this beautiful pushka? So Rav Munk told him this sensitive, beautiful story about his great-grandmother. His great-grandmother used to collect stalker. Her name was Chana Munk. She lived in Danzig. She was the Rebbetzin of the community. And the way it was in Danzig was that every house had a slit in the door. They didn't have windows, so that when somebody knocked on the door, you lifted up the slit and you saw who was there. And every single time she went to collect stalker, everybody gave her. And then one day it occurred to her, why is everybody giving me? Not everybody can afford to give me. Probably they're giving me because they see it's me, and they know I'm the Rebbetzin, and they're embarrassed not to give me. So you know what she did? You'll never believe it. She got shoes made of heavy wood, and they used to be like heavy clogs, so that as she walked up to the walk of the home, people could hear that she was her, was coming, and if she was not, they knew it was her, they didn't have to open the slit, and 2 minutes later, she saw that they didn't open up the slit to see who it is, so she went away. So because of that sensitivity, that she didn't want that another person should feel bad and compelled to give sucker, she wore those shoes. That's why at her 70th birthday, they gave her this silver pushka. And if you want to see where the pushka is today, it's by Mrs. Chana Mandelbaum, the great-great-granddaughter of Chana Munk. She lives in Philadelphia. But that's a sign of sensitivity. So we have to be careful, those of us who are involved in shul. How many times do single fellows tell me they hardly ever get an aliyah? Nobody looks at them. A young kid, this guy's 35, 36, he's not married. But a young kid gets married, 22, 23, he's wearing a towel with the great knaka, he gets aliyah 3 times as much as that fellow who's single. A fellow who's close to 40 told me something so painful.
He said, just because we're not married doesn't mean we're not people. And that goes for the single girls as well. We have to treat them just like we would treat a married woman. Just like we would treat a mother of children. They're also people. And many of them are wonderful people. They just can't find the right fit for whatever reason. It's not a pogrom in them. It's the biggest problem in Klal Yisrael today. One of the biggest problems. And so when we see singles, we have to be more sensitive to them. Fellow tells me, he comes to Shul Simchas Torah, nobody gives him the Sefer Torah. Why? Because he doesn't have a child to dance along with him? He's also a person. He's also observing the Eved's Torah. He also deserves something, some recognition. We have to begin to make sure that we have a dignity for other people. You know what that means? I'm not talking now about Lashon Hara. If you know somebody has a marriage problem and it's very serious, it's not nice, it's not right to tell it to somebody else. I'm not talking about Lashon Hara. But somebody wants to be able to walk in the street with pride. He doesn't want everybody to know his problems. You know his problems, fine. You don't have to tell it to somebody else. If somebody is never having a problem with a child, and there are many people today like that, it's not right to tell somebody else, you know, this kid is off, their child is going off the derech. That's painful. That's embarrassing. We have to do things that maintain the dignity of people. Again, it has nothing to do with Lashon Hara. And if somebody can't conceive, it's nobody's business whose problem it is, the husband's or the wife. You're not going to do anything about it. You want a daven? Fine. But don't spread that. Don't talk about that. You have to maintain the dignity of another person. I want to tell you a story about a little boy who's sitting here tonight. Listen to what happened to this child. This little boy was relying on the Bar Mitzvah Rebbe to teach him the laning, the Haftarah, the davening. I mean, the mother's an Elohim woman. What is she supposed to do? How is she going to teach him the laning and the davening? So now, last Friday night, this little boy comes to the Rav of his shul and says, Rebbe, I'm just a little bit nervous. Could I go over the laning from Shvi and the Haftarah with you? So the Rav says, of course, my kind, of course. He realizes that the father's not there. So he listens to the boy laning from Shvi till the end, and the boy starts laning the Haftarah of Mishpatim. And the Rav says, what are you doing? He says, what do you mean? This is the Haftarah of Mishpatim. He says, don't you? What do you mean? Tomorrow you're supposed to lay Mocha Chodesh. The Haftarah is a different Haftarah. It's not the Haftarah of Mishpatim. Sunday was Rosh Chodesh. This kid, he loses his teeth. You can't believe it. This is what my Rebbe said. But the Rebbe, who was a Rebbe for more than 20 years, it happened. He made a mistake. He didn't make the cheshbon. So now the poor kid comes to shul, mishpatim in the morning. He's able to lane what he lanes. And then when it comes to the haftarah, what is he supposed to do? How in the world was his mother supposed to teach him? So he derov paskind that he says the bracha, and the regular Balkara will say the Haftarah, and he said the words quietly. That afternoon, all this boy could think of, he told his mother, we've got to go to the Rebbe's house. I know he feels terrible. We have to tell him that it's okay. So to Heilig Kind and Klal Yisrael, you deserve a kiss, you know who you are. Such a boy, all his concern on the whole Shabbos was, imagine how the Rebbe feels. And the Rebbe felt terrible. He called the mother, he said, I don't want to take a penny to anything that I taught your child. I'm going to stop teaching by mitzvah. I could make such a mistake. I don't deserve to be a Rebbe. It happens. A person makes a mistake. But that's the dignity that this child has to the Rebbe. That he wants to go and tell him, don't feel bad. It's not your fault. Things happen. There's a chazal that tells us the way we are supposed to conduct ourselves in a Beis Olam. In Brachas Yud Ches Amar Aleph, Lo Yehalech Adam B'Beis HaKvoroi V'Tfilin B'Roishoi V'Sefer Torah B'Zroya V'Korei. You're not allowed to walk into a Beis Olam with your tefillin. You're not allowed to walk with your tzitzis out. You have to put your tzitzis in. You're not allowed to walk reading a Mishnayis or a Mishnah Berurah or a Chumash. Why? So the Gemara tells us, you know why? Because of a pasuk in Mishle Yudayin Hay, Lo Yeg L'Rosh, those who mock a poor person, chereif oisehu. They are mocking and making fun of the maker. Again, the same idea. If you make fun of a poor person, what you're doing is you're making fun of Hashem. Hashem created him. Imagine this person who is never dead. He can't do any mitzvahs. So what, you're going to wear tefillin in front of him? You're going to learn in front of him? You're going to wear your tzitzis out? Lo yeg l'rosh. If you make fun of a poor person, an impoverished person who can't do mitzvahs, and you're doing mitzvahs in front of him, that's cheret oisehu. And perhaps we have to learn from this halacha that there are many, many people who are considered poverty-stricken in certain ways. We have no right, if we have come here tonight, to learn dignity and decorum. If you can afford a vacation and other people in your neighborhood cannot, don't tell them about it. Don't tell anybody out of town that you bought a new car. Those in town aren't going to see it. But there's no reason to tell somebody that can't afford a new car that you have a new car. There's no reason to talk about Yom HaChatzonim, no matter how wonderful they are, to people that are struggling to marry off their children. There's no reason to talk about the grades that your wonderful children are getting to those people either who have no children or who have children who don't have those type of grades. That's lo yeg l'rosh. We have come here on Zion Adar to learn from death what we should do in life. And when we go to a Beis Olam, we have to be so careful about Leg L'Rosh. What we have to be careful in life is to be careful not to be Chas V'Shalom a Leg L'Rosh. And not to talk about the nachas of your children. Besides everything else, that all you're doing is asking for an Ayin Hara. But we're not even talking about that. Nobody cares about your kids except your mother. Believe me. Rabbi Kiva Eger, we all know the great Gaon and Gadol, once came to Warsaw for a rabbinical meeting. All the Rabbonim were getting together, and then he excused himself. He had to go visit a cousin of his, a simple shoemaker. The shoemaker was someplace out of town. Of course, everybody followed Rabbi Kiva Eger, and they see how he walks into this little shoe store, and the cousin stands up, and he greets him, Rebbe, Shalom Aleichem, I heard you were in town. And he gives him the only chair that he has, the other chair, the benkel that he has in the shoemaker place. So afterwards, people came over to Rabbi Kiva Eger and they said, Rebbe, why did you go over to visit him? He knew you were coming. He should have come to you. Listen to what Rabbi Kiva Eger said. Rabbi Kiva Eger said, it says in Devarim Chav Gimel Pasuk Gimel, if let's say you see an item in the street that has a siman, you feel that it can be returned. You're not allowed to ignore that. If you see something that somebody lost, you see an attaché case, you see something that's identifiable, you can't say, well, I'm going to ignore it. You have no right. The only one that's allowed to ignore it is a Talmud Chacham if it's embarrassing to him to pick it up. For example, let's say it's a basketball. So you can't expect a Rosh Hashiva to walk around with a basketball, even though it's got a kid's name on it. So fine. So he's allowed to say, I ignore it. But Sama person, if you see something with a name and a siman, you have to pick it up. So Rabbi Kiva Eger said, you know, it says in Yeshaya, and many people, I don't know why, although I think I do know why, I'll tell you in a second, they misquote this pasuk. The pasuk says, Umibsarcha loitis alam. Many people say, Umibsarcha altis alam. And the reason they say it is because it's in the Urchas Chaim LaRosh that way, but it's really a mistake. The pasuk is in Yeshaya Nunches Zion, and it's Mubisarcha Loitis Alein. From your relatives, do not let yourself ignore your relatives. So, Rabbi Kiva Eger says, it's the same idea. It says Loitsucha Loitis Alein, Mubisarcha Loitis Alein, but the Gemara doesn't say by your relatives that you don't, that there's a heter to ignore it if it's not Lafik Foitcha. Of course, he's only a shoemaker, but he's my relative, and I have no heter to ignore him. And that's what we have to learn tonight as well. Many of us are wonderful to the people of this world, but not to our own brothers and sisters. Many of our brothers and sisters are struggling financially, and we give tzedakah, and we get plaques, and they're struggling. Tzedakah begins at home, even though you're not going to get honor. And even though you're not going to get glory, and half the time you won't even get thanks. But you have to be sensitive to your relatives. And children have to be sensitive to parents. We must train our children that when a parent walks into the house, the child stops whatever they're doing. Hello, Tati.
Hello, Mommy. How was your day?
That's part of training. Not that you walk in and the child doesn't even recognize that you're there. And the same thing when the child walks in. You have to recognize that the child is there. How many times does it happen that a mother walks in to a house carrying all the packages and the kids are still playing, nobody does anything? You have to train them the way we did it in the house. When my wife and I drive up the driveway and we have packages, you blow the horn twice, and no matter what the kids are doing, they know they have to stop and they have to come out to the backyard to help with the packages. It's unheard of otherwise. You have to make sure that you take care and go to the simchas of your relatives, even the poor ones. We don't have time to go to all simchas. Baruch Hashem, there are many simchas in Klal Yisrael. But the ones you have to choose more than anything are those relatives, especially if they are poorer than you are, because they look up to you. And family is most important. That's what Rabbi Akiva Eger is telling us. That's the dignity to understand what a brother, a sister, a cousin, a father, or a mother is all about. And what happens if we want dignity? We want people to treat us nicely. So now we go back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Listen to what the Mishnah in Sota Daf Ches tells us. Ches Amid Beis. The Midah She'Adam Moideh Bo Moideh Din Loi. A man is measured by the way he measures others. In other words, if you act nice to others, Hashem's going to see to it that others will act nice to you. And the Mishnah tells us something frightening. Shimshon holach acharenu. Shimshon sinned with his eyes. That's why Nebach, his eyes, were torn out. Nebach avsholem nizgor b'sarai. He became a balgaiva because he had such beautiful hair. Nebach, his hair was caught in a tree, and that's how he was killed. But on the other hand, the Mishnah tells us, Moshe Rabbeinu carried the Atzmos Yosef. All of Klal Yisrael was busy with the Bizas Hayam, taking all the loot and the booty of Mitzrayim, but Moshe carried Atzmos Yosef. So what happens then? Then Hashem paid him back. And that's why Hashem Elahamokim the Eivishter himself, as it says, Vayikbar Oisei Bagai. Because Moshe Rabbeinu went and carried Yosef. He was the greatest, the Rabban Shal Yisrael. He didn't have to do it. He could have had 100 people do it for him. Hashem said, you did that, that's why I'm going to take care of you personally. And you know something? I saw a fabulous pshat in the Klei Yochar. Listen to this pshat. The Klei Yochar and Shmois Yud Gimel Pasuk Yud Tes right. Another reason. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu just at that time? It says in the Pasuk. It says in the Pasuk, Vayikach, that Moshe took Atzmos Yosef Imoy. He took it with him. Why does it say that he took it with him? Actually, it could really have said, Vayikach, Moshe Atzmos Yosef. He took the bones of Yosef. Why does it say Imoy? Listen to this Einfach. He said, Moshe Rabbeinu saw everybody's running after the money. This Bizas Mitzrayim. Everybody's going to become rich. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, tired of kinder. Remember the Yom HaMisa. I'm carrying Yosef's bones because nobody lives forever. Remember, Al Tiro Ki Yashir Ish. Don't be frightened if a person gets wealthy. You're not going to take it with you. But the mitzvah, if you do mitzvahs, that's what you're going to take with you. That's why it says, Vayikach Moshe's Asmos Yosef Imoy. He took it with him. Not only in Olam Hazeh, but in Olam Haba. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was showing them. Don't be lohut achamomoyim. Don't think that your whole life is involved with money. Because the money you can't take with you. But what you can take with you is Torah and mitzvahs and good deeds. And one more shot, I will review and end with a tremendous story and a tremendous insight. Listen to this fabulous shot from the Shevet Musa. And the Pasuk in Tilim Mem Tes, Yudzayin Yudches, Al Tiro Ki Yashirish. Don't be intimidated if you see a wealthy person, Ki Yivet Koyzeisei, he's got all the fancy homes, Ki Loida Moisei, Yigach HaKol, because in death he's not going to take it with him. So the Shevet Musa says, if you are a lousy person, and you are a person that people have ill feeling to, remember, Loiva Moisa Yigach HaKol, you're not going to take that reputation with you. It's going to remain here, and your legacy will be a rotten legacy. People will always remember how bad you were. With your reputation, you don't take that with you.
But if you're a wonderful person and you're a good person, you don't take that with you either. That reputation stays forever. People, your family will always be proud of you. People who talk about you will always talk about you with pride. It's true. You take your mitzvah and you take your good deeds and the reward, but you don't take your reputation.
You don't take your reputation. You don't take everything.
That reputation, your legacy, remains in this world forever. That's why we have such great legacies of those Talmid HaChamim, those Tzaddikim, those Askanim that stays with us forever and inspires us forever. So let's review some of what we said, and again we'll end with a tremendous story. Let's remember that we come from a Levaya. Anytime we come involved in any aspect or component of death, we go there one way, we come back another way. Tonight we came here in a very special place, in the most serious place that we have in Klal Yisrael, a place where we have to face death face to face. We are confronted with it. And it's the day after, the night after Zion Adar. And so tonight we have to leave better than when we came here. Elevated, inspired, changed. And as Rav Moshe said, a night of Nitzchiyus. Because as Shlomo HaMelech tells us, V'chai Yitein Elibay, the serious person takes it to heart. Let's remember, nobody lives forever. Let's take advantage of every day and every hour to make it a time of Nitzchiyus. Because otherwise, every moment we're dying. But we have that opportunity to make sure that every moment is Nitzchiyus. Let's remember that unbelievable shot from El Yeshoni. That's after the war. Nothing could have happened any different. No matter what doctor you would have gone to, it would have happened just the end. Remember that. Never feel guilty as long as you tried everything. Don't feel guilty. That was the Ratzon Hashem. We stand up and we are elevated and we are mechazik ourselves, because that's the way the Eibishter wanted it. And if the life of Ches Kishonik shows us that, then he has lived with a tremendous tachlis to teach us a tremendous lesson. We can't control how we die, but we can control how we live. And if we want to die as Yidden, we have to live as Yidden. We have to remember that the highest honor that communities in the past gave to people was that of Chevra Kadisha. That's why they made King Frederick. They made him an honorary member of Chevra Kadisha, perhaps as Rabbi Nigel suggests. In every shul, in every community, we should dedicate and elect people to this holy task, to this elevated task, and taka, let them be gaboy taka, and give them an exalted position in the community. And there are men and women who richly deserve it. Let's remember that wonderful Kayan, Moshe Cohen, who wanted to do the mitzvah of Chevra Kadisha but couldn't, but he went out and dug up that first grave. What a genuine, beautiful act of compassion for a man who wanted to do a mitzvah. Let's remember the reason we stand up is for the Nesei HaMitzvah. That's those people, and that's what Rav Yankov taught us. By Vayvor of David, we stand up for those that actually give the tzedakah. The reason that we have to give cover to a nifter and a kosher gain to those that are alive is ki mechavdai achabe. Every one of us carries a neshama of Klal Yisrael, the Ne Hashem, the neshama of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the light of Hashem. And so therefore, even if a person is not perfect, just think of him as that piece of art that's really not worth anything of your child, but you still hang it up. You're honoring your child. When you honor a person, after you, sir, let them go first. When it comes to getting off a bus or getting off a plane and you're both getting up at the same time, let that person go first. Give the dignity. Try it next time you want to blow your horn. Wait 3 seconds and you'll see the car will move ahead of you. Wait 3 seconds. That's all you have to do. That's the dignity of another person. Don't make them feel that you're trying to be right on top of them. It is terrible on highways. I don't know if you see it here in the city, but I can tell you where I drive in Long Island. There are signs on all the highways, steer clear of aggressive drivers. I don't know if you know this, and maybe it's not the place to mention it, but I still feel that we should mention it. Within the last few weeks, a professional football player and a professional basketball player
both got killed driving like maniacs. Tremendous speed. And not only did they get killed, but they killed others in the car. They had everything to live for. They were exceptional in their chosen profession. They had tremendous fame, and they were making more than $1 million a year. But that don't dignity for anybody else. They own the road. They don't care about anybody else. Davis, this shows you. You drive like a maniac, you'll get killed like a maniac. I don't even know who these guys were before that. But that's the lesson. You can't be aggressive just because you're accomplished. A person has dignity. The road is not yours. There are other people out there. You have an achrayus to the rest of Bria. Why? Because in every Bria is that neshama, that creation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even in a goy. That's why Rabbi Yanka wouldn't allow that alarm clock to go up 4 o'clock in the morning. Let's remember that Gabbai, the Gabbaim, the Young Israel of West Hempstead, how they asked so delicately Erev Yom Kippur Mechila for all those people that maybe didn't get an aliyah that's so baledic. What a beautiful, simple gesture. Let's be more sensitive to the single, to give them aliyah, to make them feel like people, both the young men and the young women that are not yet married. Let's learn from that little boy. That little boy who really had every right to be angry, him and his mother. But they didn't. They weren't angry. Adrava. They felt the pain of that Rebbe and wanted to go and tell that Rebbe that it wasn't really that bad. Let's remember, Loyeg LaRosh, there are many people that don't have what we have. And so therefore, in a sense, they are impoverished. Don't talk about your vacation to those who don't have vacation. And don't talk about your children to those who don't have the nachas that you have from your children. And don't talk about your mechutanim to those that haven't married off yet your children. And let's be careful to be sensitive to our relatives as Rabbi Akiva Eger was. And to go to their simchas, especially if they are impoverished more than you are. And let's remember that brilliant shot of the Klei Yochar. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu, that's why he carried the Atmos Yesei, to show that man does not live forever. And we shouldn't be lohos achamomoin. And then, of course, remember that your reputation stays here in this world. Let's end with this tremendous story and a great insight. A while ago, I was in Switzerland. And when I was in Switzerland, I had davened in a certain shul in Lugano. And there was a fellow who davened with me from England. And then his wife came to pick him up, and he said to me, "You know, my wife, she's also a speaker." So I said, "Oh, really? Where are you from?" She tells me, "From England." And she tells me her name is Yocheved Khan. Now, she tells me that in England, many years ago, in the 1980s, before you were able to go to Russia the way you're able to go today, she would go with a group of people, with men and women, and they would teach, the men would teach the men, and the women would teach the women in basements and secret places. So, some people like to nosh cake and chocolate. I like to nosh stories. So I said to her, "I'm sure as a speaker, you must have a certain story or two that you always tell over." She said, "It's interesting you should say that, because every single year when I go back to Russia and I begin with a new group of people, they always tell me that I've got to tell them this story." And I said, "Would you be kind enough to tell it to me?" And this is the story. She told me an amazing story about herself. In 1940, her parents, Shloima and Rosa Levenberg, had her as a little girl. They had the third daughter, and they named her Yocheved. Nebuch, she was only 2.5 years old, and a goy came to the house, a simple maid, a woman, and she said to Shloima and Rosa Levenberg, "I know that the Nazis are coming. Give me your child. I promise you that I will shield and I will protect her. I know they're going to come for you and you won't be safe." And with tremendous heavy heart, they gave over their baby daughter. And Nebuch, the father and mother and the two other girls, they were taken to a Dutch concentration camp in Westerbork. And then eventually they were taken to a concentration camp in Poland and they were killed. And this little girl never saw her parents again. This maid took this little girl and brought her up north in Holland, away from the center city, in a little fishing town, and asked a couple to watch this child. And amazingly, a goyish family watched this child for 5 years until after the war. After the war,
She was now 7 and a half. This maid comes back to Holland, to Amsterdam, and she goes looking for a relative of this little girl. And she finds someone by the name of Arend de Haas, who is the head of the Agudas Yisrael in Amsterdam. And she goes and she says, you know, you have a niece that survived the war. They couldn't believe it. They thought that their brother-in-law and sister Shlomo and Rosa Levenberg were killed. But they, if this girl says, well, let's find out if it's true. And they all traveled up to that north town, and they went to that house. And those parents who were raising this child said to the little girl, we are not your parents. You have to go back. And Yocheved Khan told me she was crying. She didn't believe them. She didn't even know she was Jewish. They never told her she was Jewish. And now she was in this house for 5 years, and now she had to leave, and she came back to live with her uncle and aunt, Arend de Haas. And she lived there for many years, became an Erlicha young girl, and then eventually she was sent to Eretz Yisrael. She was sent to Eretz Yisrael in 1959, and she went to a Beit Yaakov there. She was 18, 19 years old, and one night she was at a chasana. One of her friends in that Beit Yaakov was getting married. And at that chasana was an old woman from Holland. Her name was Clara Asher Pinkoff. And somebody goes over to Clara Asher Pinkoff and says, you know, there's a young girl here from Holland, from your hometown in Amsterdam. Would you like to meet that young girl? So this old woman, Clara Asher Pinkoff, says, of course I would like to see somebody from my hometown. And she goes to meet this girl. And when she takes a look at this girl, she says, you are Rosa Levenberg's daughter. She says, how do you know that? She says, because you look exactly like I remember your mother before the war. And they begin getting into a conversation, a very warm, touching conversation. And then Mrs. Pinkoff says to Yocheved, do you know how you got your name? And Yocheved told me she got so frightened. She said, why did you ask me that? That is a question that has bothered me for years. I have no relatives named Yocheved. I have no cousins named Yocheved. My parents aren't alive. No one in my family is named Yocheved. Why was I given that name? You know the answer to that question? Listen to what Clara Asher Pinkoff told her. She said, in the years in 1939 and in 1940, I was a writer for the Jewish newspaper in Holland. And in 1940, I wrote an article, and I said that there are people here in Holland, Yiddish people, who don't want to have children anymore. Because they say, what use is there to bring children in this world? Who knows what the future will be? But all of you, I want you to know, she wrote in the article, there was a time when Amram and Yocheved, they said the same thing. They didn't want to bring a child into the world. But then their daughter Miriam said, your Gzeira is worse than Barai. You are making the Gzeira so that no boys and no girls will be born. And just like Hashem helped in those days, Hashem will help in these days. That was the article that I wrote. The next week, your mother wrote a letter to the editor. And she wrote, I am expecting a child. And many of my friends have made fun of me. How do I dare bring a child into the world at such a critical time? And so therefore, I am writing you that if I have a boy, I'm going to name him Amram. And if I have a girl, I'm going to name her Yocheved. And you were born. And that's how you got the name Yocheved. On Zayin Adar, many, many years ago, Amram and Yocheved had Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu not only died on Zayin Adar, but Moshe Rabbeinu was born on Zayin Adar. And so therefore, Zayin Adar is not only a day of sadness, but it's a day of hope. It's a day that anyone that has a tzara has to know. That when things look so terrible, when all the boys were being killed, when people were afraid to have children, when this little boy that was born was raised by a goy, when this little boy that was born was chased by Paroi, he became the Moshiach of Klal Yisrael. And it all started on Zayin Adar. So Zayin Adar is a time never to give up. Zayin Adar is a time to know that no matter what sorrows there are in Klal Yisrael, there's a time for hope and a time to look forward to greater things in life. When the Tzfas Emet Nebuch was Nifter, his son, Rabbi Avram Mordechai,
who took over to be the next Derer Rebbe, he said to his younger brother, at least our father had Arichas Yomim. So the younger brother said to him, what do you mean he had Arichas Yomim? He was only 56. That's not Arichas Yomim. So Rav Avraham Marcha said, I didn't say he had Arichas Shonim. He had Arichas Yomim. There's a tremendous difference between Arichas Shonim and Arichas Yomim. Arichas Shonim means many years. None of us can guarantee that. Nobody knows how long they will live. But every one of us can guarantee that we'll have Arichas Yomim. That means to make the most of every day and to make every day a long accomplished Mitzchias day. And now let me end with a beautiful insight. Many years ago, when Avraham Soloveitchik, the Brisker Rav, made Seva Brachas for his youngest son, Meir, the Brisker Rav was feeling very great and very wonderful. And every song that was sung at that Sheva Brachas, the Rav would darshan. If they sang Korina Bishua, he would darshan on that pasuk. If they sang whatever song about Kol Sasa V'Kol Simcha, he sang that song. And he darshaned on that song. So they went around the table, everybody should lead a different song. And there was a great tzaddik sitting at that table. That tzaddik was Rav Zelvel Edelman, Oliver Sholem. I had a schut to see him a few years ago. He was just nifter a few weeks ago. Rav Zelvel Edelman, in his ne'imus and his sweetness, began singing that song, Yomim al Yemei Melech Toysim. The Eibishter should add days on days to the king. Why did he sing that? Because he considered the Brisker Rav the king of Klal Yisrael. So he began singing towards the Rav, Yomim al Yemei Melech Toysim. So now it was the Brisker Rav's turn to darshan on this pasuk. Listen to what he said. He said in Mefarshim, and you look it up, talk under a dot, until in Samach Aleph, Pasuk Zion, there's a machloikis. Who is the king referred to in this pasuk? Yomim al Yemei Melech Toysim. It's either David HaMelech or Mashiach. So the Brisker Rav said like this, if it's David HaMelech, I understand. Yomim al Yemei Melech Toysim. David was only supposed to live 70 years, so the Shila is, he's supposed to live, let him live longer. Yomim al Yemei Melech Toysim. But if it's going on Mashiach, so what do you mean you should add years to Mashiach? Mashiach's going to live forever. So the Brisker Rav said, no, it means that he should come earlier. And if he comes earlier, it's Yomim al Yemei Melech Toysim. Let us hope that we will make every day Mitzchias, that we will taka have Arichas Yomim. It should be Yomim al Yemei Melech Toysim. We should see Mashiach right away. Death will be obliterated, and we should have Chaim Li'olam. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for listening.